One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Hello there, Med Talkers, and welcome back to another bonus episode of our podcast where we're travelling back in time to discover the stories behind some of the most incredible creations that have changed the way we practice medicine today. Now, have you ever been admitted to hospital and had some medication, be it antibiotics, fluids, or whatever else can go directly into your bloodstream, thanks to that tiny plastic tube that we call a cannula? Well, I have. Recently, I went to my local Indian restaurant and, shock horror, managed to contract food poisoning. The garlic chili chicken and paneer were definitely worth it though. I was in a bad state and was extremely dehydrated. Being a medic myself, I checked my vital signs at home and then decided that I should probably go to A&E. I then get seen by the nurse and doctor, who can also tell that I am very dehydrated. My heart's rate beating like there's no tomorrow and I feel absolutely exhausted. The nurse then kindly says sharp scratch and places that needle and plastic tube into my vein and hooked me up to what I can only describe as magic potion. In reality, it was just normal saline or salty water, but oh my god, did it do wonders for me. After one bag of 1 liter normal saline, I felt brand new, so much so that I was ready to go back home. 1 liter later, I self-discharged myself home, not wanting to spend the night on the medical unit with a guaranteed sleepless night. It made me think, another incredible invention, so small, yet so vital, and without this plastic and without this needle, we would be so helpless treating patients. From antibiotics to anti-sickness to fluids to blood products, we rely so heavily on these cannulas, or cannulae, but I've never looked into how we've got them. So join me guys as I journey back and learn all about the story of the cannula and its intravenous therapy. So intravenous administration of medication is actually a method that's been around since the 1600s and possibly even before that. The first documented attempt at IV or intravenous therapy was carried out by a doctor who cared for Pope Innocent VIII in Rome. The Pope went into a coma after having a stroke, and his doctor tried to transfuse him with blood from 3 young boys. No tubes were used for this. The boys' veins were somehow joined in an anastomosis, and the blood was exchanged. Now sadly, this didn't go well, and all 4 actually died in this experiment. The first working IV infusion device came in 1658. Not from a doctor, no, but from an architect called Christopher Wren. He was an architect of more than 50 churches in Britain, including St. Paul's Cathedral, but he was also an anatomist, astronomer, and physicist. Now, using a writing quill and a pig's bladder, Wren's first experiment was to infuse a mixture of wine, ale, opium, and a brown-coloured powder called liver of antimony into a dog's veins. It was well tolerated by the dog and repeated using different infusates. But issues started to arise because these quills could not be easily fixed to sit in the blood vessels and were not firm or durable enough. And then after that, silver was trialled. Wren then went on to design churches, and his colleague, Richard Lower, took over these experiments and carried out a first successful transfusion between 2 dogs. The first human-to-animal transfusion took place in 1667, thanks to a French professor of philosophy and mathematics called Jean-Baptiste Denis. He transfused a lamb's blood into a young man who was suffering from madness. The man soon suffered a transfusion reaction, with all of the well-recognized effects such as a temperature, tachycardia or fast heart rate, sweating, abdominal pain, and affected the kidneys such that they started having blood in the urine or hematuria. Denis was charged by the man's wife with intentional poisoning, but he was soon exonerated. Countless deaths then followed, and animal to human transfusions were actually banned in 1668 in France, and this ban was soon followed in England, Italy, and elsewhere in Europe. And it meant that research and development of IV infusions then took a significant halt. And then, in 1795, a brave American doctor, Philippe Physique, performed the first human-to-human blood transfusion because he claimed it could reduce complications in obstetric cases. and then Dr. James Blundell, a British obstetrician at Guy's and St. Thomas' Hospital, performed a series of transfusions to treat postpartum hemorrhage. The first case was reported to be in 1818, and the patient's husband was actually the donor. His blood was extracted using a needle and inserted into his wife using a syringe. It was a huge success, and Blundell did 10 more between 1825 and 1830. You can actually see the needles and syringes that were used for these transfusions back in the day on our Instagram page by just searching medtalks.uk. Multiple devices were invented. The impeller infused blood under pressure. The gravitator infused through gravity. And this was a revolutionary therapy for its time. And speaking of therapy, this takes me nicely to introduce our sponsors for this episode. This episode and podcast is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp. That's Better H-E-L-P. Now guys, for all of you listeners who are feeling stressed or overwhelmed with whatever is going on in your lives, revision, exams, personal lives, relationships, job, things can get quite overwhelming and we've all been there. If you feel like things are getting a bit too much for you, then BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help you. You can talk to a therapist in a completely private and online environment at your convenience. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with the therapist in under 48 hours, but most of the time, it's much less than that. Then you schedule a secure video and phone sessions. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages and everything you share is completely confidential. And also, you can request a new therapist at no additional charge and any time. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there is a special offer to all of you wonderful MedTalks listeners where you can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp by entering the URL betterhelp.com/medtalks. That's betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. Okay, back to the episode. It was really during the cholera outbreak in the 19th century where IV therapy really took off. Between 1831 and 1832, it was a scary time to live in Europe. This frightening tropical disease was tearing its way through Europe with devastating effects, killing victims within hours of the first symptoms. Doctors were helpless and didn't know what to do. We now know that cholera was heavily linked with human excretions, and poor hygiene with lack of appropriate toilets was a recipe for disaster. At the time, sewage was sometimes placed into newspapers, folded, and thrown out of windows. Medics were trying conventional treatments at the time, things like brandy, things like removing blood from a patient, breathing nitrous oxide, but these weren't working, and in some cases they were doing more harm than good. In 1831, Dr. William O'Shaughnessy noticed that cholera victims were losing huge amounts of water and its saline and alkaline components in their blood. And he then thought that by giving people salty water with albumin, this would correct deficiencies and restore blood to its previous specific gravity, which ensures normal health. And here, the normal saline infusion, which I had in A&E to cure my gastroenteritis dehydration, was born. One of O'Shaughnessy's students, Dr. Latta, actually performed the first IV procedure where he gave saline to a cholera patient. The dehydrated patient survived with this fluid therapy and it was deemed a miracle. Now, none of this could be possible without the actual needles and tubes themselves to allow the fluid into our veins and replenish us. In 1845, the hollow needle was perfected by Francis Rind of Dublin. He used the device to inject morphine into nerves for the treatment of trigeminal neuralgia, which is a condition that causes painful sensations similar to electric shocks on one side of the face. In 1853, a French doctor called Charles Pravaz developed the first practical metal syringe, and in 1855, Dr. Alexander Wood of Edinburgh was the first physician to use a hypodermic syringe for injection of narcotics into patients. And hypodermic meaning just below the skin. In 1876, Dr. Sidney Ringer proposed a physiological solution for perfusion, which consisted of sodium, potassium, chloride, and calcium. Now, at first, this solution was used in physiology laboratories for bathing excised frog hearts. Based on this idea, the production of Ringer's lactate was developed. And over 150 years later, Ringer's lactate continues to be one of the most widely used infusion solutions in the world. In the 1950s, plastic tubing had replaced rubber, and in the 1970s, plastic bags were introduced, reducing the risk of any air embolisms from the air venting in glass bottles. Until and even into the 1950s, intravenous sets consisted of steel reusable needles with a stylet inside to keep the lumen open. And with the invention of the TFE Teflon tubing in 1969, the stickiness of the cannula was dramatically reduced. Teflon cannulae were easy to slide over the needle and thus easy to thread into veins. They proved not only to be simple to insert but also resistant to any peelback. And Teflon at the time was revolutionary since it was a self-lubricating, flexible material which was non-compliant to pressure. Also, additionally, non-toxic, tissue-compatible and tough. In the 1970s and 80s, doctors all over the world came to expect intravenous cannulas to perform to extremely high standards, and use became virtually universal. At the same time, another amazing revolution occurred. Normally, the procedure of IV cannulation would be a doctor-dominated one, but there was a massive shift at that time to a nurse-dominated one. The Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston was the first to allow a nurse to administer intravenous therapy. She became the first IV nurse and formed the first IV team. And in 1973, the Intravenous Nurses Society was founded. And these days, nurses are the ones who 99% of the time are handling the intravenous therapy for patients. So it's taken quite a journey. During the early part of the 20th century, the IV infusions were housed in open containers, which was covered with gauze in an effort to prevent contamination. Then in the 1930s, infusions were kept in a vacuum-sealed glass bottle, and then a couple of decades later, they were switched over to the plastic bags that we use today. So the journey in summary. Sir Christopher Wren, Dr. Richard Lower, and their contemporaries used to use feather, writing quills, and animal bladders in that era of IV infusion. These crude devices were then replaced in the 19th century by metal needles, rubber tubing, and glass containers. But this equipment required a lot of cleaning and sterilization between uses, but paved the way for infusion of blood, physiological solutions, and nutritional supports. And then in the 20th century, there's been a switch over to plastic. First polyvinyl chloride, then Teflon, and finally polyurethane. Without these simple but tiny plastic tubes, we would not be able to administer pharmaceutical nutritional therapy. We'd not be able to administer chemotherapy or disease-specific treatments, and we wouldn't be able to administer contrast solutions to detect small lesions on MRI and CT scans that can have huge impacts in diagnosing and treating patients. Now, pretty much every patient that comes into a hospital, particularly adult patients, will have an intravenous cannula inserted pretty much as soon as they come in, to take bloods, to administer medication, and to carry them through their journey in hospital. And there you have it. That's the story of the cannula and its use in intravenous therapy. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and found it interesting, as I have. Please remember to share it with your friends, peers, and anyone else who you think may find it interesting. We've got more of these bonus episodes coming up where we trace our forefathers' footsteps and look at how we've developed all of these amazing creations that we use every day in our modern day medicine. Stay tuned for plenty more coming up. Thanks for listening. You can message us on our social media platforms or email us. Our email is hellomedtalks@gmail.com. Follow us on our social media, subscribe to our channels, and we look forward to bringing you lots more content in the future. Thank you. Thanks again and goodbye.